All right. Now let's get to some analysis. I'm very grateful to have Jack Abramoff, who understands what this process is like. You all know Jack, the movie Casino Jack, also the best-selling author of Capital Punishment, The Hard Truth About Corruption from America's Most Notorious Lobbyist. Jack, of course, did 4 years in federal prison. He understands what was at stake here. Jack, it's an honor to have you on. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's just get your general feedback and your general thoughts on, were you expecting what happened with Edwards essentially to walk free today? Talk to me about that.
Well, I think first the good news is that now the hunt for the real adulterer can take place, like in the days of O.J. But no,
right.
I have to say the government had a very tough case to prove here, and Edwards had a very brilliant lawyer. I had the same lawyer, by the way, Abby Lowell. He really is a.
Oh, yeah, I didn't realize this. Sorry to interrupt here, but your lawyer for your trial was the same lawyer as John Edwards.
Yeah, except I didn't go to trial. I basically pled, and I did in fact break the law, and I admitted it and pled. But Abby is a really brilliant strategist and tactician, and a really fantastically smart lawyer. What I found interesting is that with all the people he thanked at the end, he didn't thank the one guy who actually got him through this, which was Abby. Which, you know, who knows what the story is there. But you know, I think the government had a very, very tough case here. They had to prove that these were in fact contributions and not gifts, and they didn't have the people who made them available to them either because of age or death, and it was just a very tough prosecution for them to pursue. And notwithstanding what a odious miscreant Edwards is, the fact is if you don't break the law, you shouldn't really be punished because you're just a jerk. God will certainly mete out enough punishment to him, and I think society will as well.
Okay, now, Jack, you brought up a good point because, you know, with your case, it was a plea deal. It was a six-year sentence. You served four. Edwards had an offer for a plea deal before the trial. He said no to that. One of the main reasons why Edwards said he didn't want to lose his law license. So he gambled big time, and that looks like that gamble for him paid off today. Can you walk us through the mindset here of, you know, maybe why he decided not to take the plea deal? Go ahead.
Well, I think he probably truly did believe, and obviously was effectively argued, that he didn't actually break the law, and he thought that they could convey this to a jury. But I got to tell you, it's a very big risk, because if you do go to trial in the United States and you're found guilty and you don't take that plea, you're going to wind up usually with more jail time than you otherwise would have. And the fact is, who knows what they were offering in terms of a plea. They may have been offering him something where he didn't have to go to jail, or they may have said, look, you're going to go to jail no matter what it is. So it's hard to really know what's going on behind the scenes there.
Gotcha. Now, Jack, I got to ask the next question in everybody's mind. Okay, a mistrial on five counts. What happens in a sense with the government? Do they retry this case? Do they bring Edwards back into the courtroom? Or at this point, after this much money spent, 9 days of deliberations, they say, wait, this is a guy that we're not going to convict, and Edwards is going to get off clean. What does your gut tell you?
My gut tells me is that they're not going to bring him back. I think that Holder has shown with the Stevens thing and other cases that he's very cautious about going after these public officials if he can't get an absolute win on them. And that is probably a deviation of the approach to the Justice Department a little bit from the past. But I just think if they go back again and they do it and they spend all the money, and these are very costly trials, by the way, for everybody, including us, the taxpayers. They do it again and they don't get them. How do they explain that?
Right. And as far as the jury and what they're thinking, so five counts, a mistrial, a deadlock, and then count three, a not guilty unanimous verdict, which is just a very strange thing because that count had to do with money that Bunny Mellon gave him, that 101-year-old woman, back in 2008. Yet the count with Bunny Mellon in the year 2007 was a deadlock. So honestly, I can't even read into what this jury was thinking whatsoever, what line of logic they could have. But then again, I gave up reading juries after the O.J. Simpson trial. Can you at least try to tell us what they were thinking?
Well, you know, it's hard, of course, as you say, it's hard to know what they're thinking. But the only thing I could think, and when I heard that that was the count they were deadlocked on, frankly, I thought he would wind up being declared innocent at that point, at least in that count, because it could very well have been the previous count to that was whether or not he had violated it with her in 2007. And they could have said in their minds in 2007, they couldn't make up whether or not he was deep in the middle of this presidential campaign. But in 2008, he was already beyond his presidential campaign. He was basically out of it when the money came in. So I think that one, by sending that signal on that issue, I think they were also, in essence, saying to the judge, look,